At the end of Parshat Bechukosai, we have a law that although is not applicable today, the messages and the ideas that we derive from this law are tremendously powerful lessons for our lives. I'd like to take a look at the law. I'd like to take a look at two different aspects connected with it and see what are the messages that we can derive for our lives. And I think we will come away with one central idea that this law teaches us. Torah begins by saying, Hashem spoke to Moshe, telling him, "Speak to the Israelites and say to them, this is the law when a person expresses a vow to donate to God the endowment valuation of a person." And these laws are called erechin, the value of a person. "The endowment valuation of a 20 to 60-year-old male shall be 50 shekels, according to the sanctuary standard. For a woman, this endowment value shall be 30 shekels. For a person between 5 and 20 years old, the endowment valuation shall be 20 shekels for a male and 10 shekels for a female. For a person between 1 month and 5 years old, the endowment valuation shall be 5 silver shekels for a male and 3 silver shekels for a female. For a person over 6 years old, the endowment valuation shall be 15 shekels for a man and 10 shekels for a woman. If a person is too poor to pay the endowment, he shall present himself before the priest so the priest can determine the endowment valuation. The priest shall then make this determination on the basis of how much a person making the vow can afford." Very fascinating law. A person decides that they wanted to donate to the Beis HaMikdash their value. And this money was used for the Bedek HaBayit, for the improvements of the temple. So if a person was so motivated to donate their value or someone else's value, so then the determining factor was based on the gender as well as on the age. Those were the two determining factors. Now before we get to the specifics of this law and the deeper meanings behind it, I'd like to try to step back for one moment to understand the different value system between the male and the female. We find here, just in summation, that there are really three different age groups going on. There's the age group between 30 days and 5 years old. You have the age group between 5 and 20, between 20 and 50, between 20 and 60, and between 60 and older. We need to understand what is the significance of these different age groups, as well as the significance of why a woman's endowment is different than a male's endowment. To just present perhaps two approaches on these questions, I'd like to present first, very briefly, the Al Shech HaKadosh, and the second, Rav Hirsch. And then we'll begin our study in a much broader sense of what this law is all about. The Al Shech knows that we don't pay anything between 1 day and 30 days because you have to make sure that the person is really a viable person. And he explains that between the age of 30 days and 5 years, he pays 5 shekels for a boy. Why? Because the father derived 5 benefits from his male child. 1, he witnessed his son emerging from the dangerous 30-day period. 2, he performed the ritual of circumcision. 3, perhaps he performed the ritual of the redemption of the firstborn. 4, he partially fulfilled his duty of procreation. And 5, very fascinating, he fulfilled the mitzvah of kindness by supporting the child. In the case of a female child, seeing that there's no mitzvah of circumcision or redemption on the firstborn, there remain only 3 mitzvahs, and that's why he only pays 3 shkalim. So the Al Shech explains very interestingly that since there are 5 mitzvahs potentially attached to a male child, the male child has 5 shkalim attached to him, while since there are only 3 mitzvahs attached to the female child, there's only 3 shkalim given to her. The Al Shech continues, between the ages of 5 and 20, the individual years themselves are not so much landmarks as they are decades. In other words, there's very little difference between a boy of 5 and a boy of 6. But there is a difference between a boy of 5 and a boy of 13. 2 great events took place in the boy's life during this period. He was initiated into Torah study at 5, and he became responsible for his mitzvahs at 13. Hence the vow calls for a payment of 20 shkalim. A female who is charged with fewer mitzvot is valued at 10 shkalim. And it continues, between the ages of 20 and 50, a male surrounded with duties of worship, study of Torah, Mishnah, Talmud, many mitzvot, from which a female is exempt. And therefore, again, you have the difference between 50 shkalim for a male and 30 shkalim for a female. From the age of 60 and above, a man has lost more than a major part of his strength, not only 6/10, but at least 7/10. Hence, the remainder of payment is 15 shkalim, have a maximum of 50. For a female, the payment is 10 shkalim, because she has not lost proportionally as much strength as the male has during the foregoing period. So this is one approach, perhaps a classic approach, that the difference between a male and a female, and the difference between the years, is basically a difference in the amount of mitzvot that are connected with this person at any given age. And since the woman inherently has fewer mitzvot than men, so hence, her value and dedication is going to be of a different value than a male value. Another approach, which I think is a very fascinating philosophical approach, is that of Rav Hirsch, where he notes that the subject of this precept of the Torah is the case where somebody makes a vow to give to sanctuary a sum which represents the erech of a nefesh l'Hashem, the value of a certain person. And he clearly notes here that it's a universal scale according to age and sex, and it's divided into 4 years. And it says there's no consideration of any physical, spiritual, intellectual, moral, social qualification. It's only modified by these two conditions. And he also goes on to say that you have to take note here of certain numbers that keep on repeating themselves. He says when we compare the numbers 5, 20, 50, 15 for a male soul, and 3, 10, 30, 10 for the female, we understand clearly that we're dealing with the same figures in different proportions. In each case are 10 times the erech of a female and the male infant respectively. So a woman at 30 is 10 times 3 when she was an infant, and a male at 50 is 10 times 5 as he was. He says, clearly we see here that the 3 and the 5 are the numbers that we start with. 3 to be the formula for the life mission of a woman, 5 for that of a man, and 10 the sign of completion of perfection. Now we venture to suggest that the home, the family, may well be represented by the number 3, the husband, the wife, and the child. But the community, as we've often found in the Torah, by the number 2. So that the family and the community together would be expressed by the number 5. So Rav Hirsch is explaining that the individual family is really the base number 3, a father, mother, and a child. Well, the community has to be a minimum of 2 individuals, and hence the combination of the home and the community equals up to 5. Notes Rav Hirsch, if this is not far from the truth, then 3 is a sign of a woman's vocation, woman's mission in life, the family, the home, 5, that of a man, family life, and communal responsibility. And with these 2 numbers, the signs of the respective missions in life, the erech of the infant until the time when they have reached a trainable age, the end of the 5th year. And he goes on to explain that the period from the end of the 20th to 60th year is the age of full activity, of the completed training of the male and female vocations. Its sign for the full activity of the woman in her mission of life is a product of 10 times 3, which is 30. For a man, it's 10 times 5, which is 50. So the second approach of Rav Hirsch is that these numbers of 3 and 5 don't so much signify, as we saw earlier in the Ashulchan HaKadosh, a lessening in terms of responsibility of mitzvot, but rather it's a positive focus of what is their erech, what is their value, what is their focus in life, where does the male have to put his energies, where does the female have to put her energies. Having explained this, let us now try to look at 2 different aspects of this law and see the beauty inherent here, the lessons that we can derive. And I think in doing so, we'll be able to tap in to what the Ashulchan HaKadosh is saying. It reflects the mitzvot's value, the Torah focus of a person, as well as Rav Hirsch, where the focus is on your prime responsibility in life, the family vis-a-vis the community. And clearly it's not that the woman is not involved in the community and the male is not involved in the family, but rather their prime responsibility. I think idea number one that we can derive from this mitzvah is found once again in Rav Masechiyahu's book that we've been dealing with the last few weeks, of With Hearts Full of Faith, really an incredible sefer of real yisodos hachayim, fundamental aspects, where he speaks about, in an essay called The Power of Speech, he notes that we find very often in the Torah that a few simple words change the halachic status of peoples and articles. One of these is the mitzvah of erechin, of values. If a person says, erki alai, I accept upon myself my value, he is immediately obligated to donate a sum equivalent to his value to the temple fund. And the Sefer Chinuch, who discusses at length the many aspects of this mitzvah, notes the following. A person can only participate in the higher world, writes the Chinuch, through his speech. This is the most distinguished part of the human being. It is what distinguishes him as the person in the verse. And the Lord breathed into the person a nefesh chaya, a living spirit, to which Targum Onkelos notes, a nefesh chaya as a ruach memalala, a spirit that speaks. All the other parts of the body, continues the Chinuch, are inanimate in the higher sense. And if a person were to corrupt his speech, his body would remain entirely inanimate, a useless vessel. Therefore, a person must keep his word. A person participates in the higher world through his speech. Let us try to understand this a little bit more deeply. It's very interesting that the Or Gedaliah notes that we know that there are four basic elements of the world. There's domain, that which is inanimate. There's the tzomeach, that which grows, the vegetative world. There's the chai, the animal world, and the medaber, and the speaking world. And that's how individuals are referred to as medaber. And the Gedaliah notes that it's very interesting that when a tzomeach, when something alive no longer has that aspect of smicha, of life, kevan shenikzar min haaretz v'nifsak koach smichuto, ein hu kayam kidomeim. Ela kevan shiyaram imadregato harei eno mitkayem klal. When a flower is cut from the ground, it doesn't then go down to a level of the inanimate. It's nothing. It no longer has any real value. And likewise, the same thing holds true of a chai, of an animal. Once an animal dies, it loses its whole status as a chai. It also becomes absolutely nothing. And says the Or Gedaliah, if you follow this logically, the chain hu eitzel hamedaber, likewise by a person. If you're going to abuse your power as a medaber, then also you are really worthless. What makes us special, what makes us unique, what empowers us to make us above the domain, the somer, the chai, all these levels, is the fact that we're medaber. And just like a plant loses its status as a plant, it doesn't go down a level, it loses its status. And an animal loses its status when it's no longer alive. When we take that aspect, like the smicha, like the sprouting, like the chai, like the life force of an animal, we take that aspect of medaber, of speaking, and we abuse it, so we too lose that aspect that makes us unique, that makes us special. Let's try to understand this a little bit more deeply. This very powerful Nefesh HaChaim, Rav Chaim of Voloshiner, getting back to Rav Solomon's article, where he talks about in depth the concept of Tzelem Elohim, that a person is created in the image of God. And he asks, what does it mean to be created in the image of God? God has no form and no substance. How can we be created in His image? So he notes that clearly it is meant only as an expression of a certain similarity. Like David HaMelech writes, I resembled a pelican lost in the desert. Does this mean he grew wings and a beak? Of course not. It means that he was lonely, forlorn, and wandering like a pelican lost in the desert. When the Torah tells us that humankind was created in God's image, it also means that we were created with a similarity to certain godly characteristics. In particular, continues Nefesh HaChaim, it refers to the characteristics associated with the name of Elohim, which is translated as the sole power in the creation and the control of the world. By saying that we were created, B'Tselem Elohim, in the image of Elohim, the Torah is telling us that God gave us the power to control creation, both in the lower and higher worlds. As he continues to note that we can more readily relate to the idea of human control in the physical world, but our control also extends to worlds beyond our comprehension and imagination. Just as the unseen puppeteer pulls strings that causes the puppet to move about, so do the actions of the Jewish people in this world pull strings that affect changes in the higher world. It explains so beautifully a very interesting question. We speak about so often that a person should have Yira Shamayim, which is literally translated as fear of heaven. But the obvious question is, we don't have to be afraid of heaven, we have to be afraid of God. So what is Yira Shamayim, a fear of heaven, about? And there are a number of answers that are offered. Rav Chaim of Volozhin explains, it means that we have to fear the effect of our actions in heaven. Our every word and deed can build great edifices in the higher world. And he says, one day, we'll come to heaven and survey what our lives in this world have wrought in the next. If we're not careful, we may survey a scene of great devastation with ruins and rubble strewn as far as the eye can see. A scene that would cause us untold pain and anguish. Better to have fear of heaven now, to fear the damage we can do to heaven, so when we arrive in heaven, we will find towering spiritual edifices rather than scenes of devastation. And this is something that we need to keep in mind within our own lives, that we know so clearly that that which we say has such a tremendous effect in the upper worlds. And we have to be cognizant that we have the ability to create or destroy worlds. And we ourselves have seen this in our lives, that if we're not careful about what we say, we can create such tremendous havoc in other people's lives. And likewise, we have no idea how one positive comment, one nice compliment, can really affect and change a person that will stay with a person for years as well. And it continues with a powerful insight, where when the Pasuk in Amos, in the fourth chapter, notes that God forms mountain, creates winds, and tells a person about his conversations, Rav Chaim of Volozhin explains the end of the verse. What does it mean to tell a person Magila Adam Masicho? Tell a person what his conversations are? It's to show him the far-reaching effect his words have, how they can build and how they can destroy. This is what a person's told at the end of time. When a person dies, he's not told only what his conversations were, but rather to tell him the effects of what his conversations had. And very often, my friends, it's frankly a very scary idea. We don't know the effects of what we say. Sometimes we make a casual remark to somebody and it really affects them in untold ways that can have ripple effects for years. And this is particularly true in the way we treat children, where we call a child a name, we label a child, and that child believes that they are that aspect. You call a child clumsy, you call a child stupid, whatever it may be. And the child will grow up with that image in his mind, and it can have an effect on the child for their entire lives that they will never break out of. And they are a different person because of that label that you gave the child. Rabbi Sisiel goes one step further, and he quotes a very beautiful insight of Rav Elia Lopian. He says, what does the mountains and wind, the beginning of the verse, right? He forms mountains, creates winds, and tells the person about his conversations, has to do with a person's conversation. Rav Elia Lopian explains that although mountains are massive, solid, and movable, God told the prophet Eliyahu, a great and powerful wind rips apart mountains and shatters stones. What's a wind? Can you see it? Can you catch it? It's just air. And yet a wind can destroy mountains and shatter stones. That's how God creates wind. Words can also destroy and shatter, even though they're just air. This is the power of speech. This is the aspect of erchin, that a person with their mouth can say, I take upon myself the value of who I am to donate it to the temple. A person with the power of speech has the ability to elevate, has the ability to dedicate, has the ability to donate. We need to be more cognizant of this gift that's given to us, this power of speech, and to be able to use this power in the correct possible way, to understand that we build worlds, to understand that it is the medium of connection. As the Maharal says so beautifully, and a wonderful insight that Rav Wolbe quotes, where the Mishnah says, Rav Chananya ben Trajon says, two people that are sitting, v'yesh b'neihem divrei Torah, and they have among them the words of Torah, then Shechina Shruya b'neihem, then the divine presence is found among them. And he continues by saying, if one person studies Torah, then this person, ma'aleh alav hakatuv kilu kiyema kol ha-Torah kula. It's as if they've accepted upon themselves or have been able to uphold the whole Torah. And the Maharal notes here that when two people sit and learn Torah, then you have the divine presence. Yes, when one person sits and learns, he has a reward, but you don't find the divine presence on him in that same language. And the Maharal explains why, because when two people are learning Torah, they're medabrim at divrei Torah. They speak words of Torah, then it's a complete Torah. While one person's learning Torah, very often he has no one to talk to, and therefore it's not a complete Torah. And the Shechina, the divine presence, only rests in a complete Torah. Here's the punchline. Nimsa, we find ki ha-Shechina sharad dafka b'dibur b'Torah. The whole aspect of the Shechina is not necessarily just in learning Torah, but it's in the dibur of Torah. It's in the speech of Torah. Because the speech hu ha-machshir l'chibur b'dveikut. Because speech is a medium, is an instrument of connection. Perhaps with this we can explain more deeply Rav Wolbe, who continues in this essay to explain that one of the things that we need to teach our children is not so much how to speak. That comes naturally. Kids love to speak. Kids love to babble. But rather, as soon as a child knows how to speak, what we should teach them is how to be silent. If we see the inherent power in speech, if we understand that speech has the ability to be a chibur in dveikut, to be a medium of connection, to be a medium of connection to bring the Shechina down here, to be a medium of connection to connect with other people and the long-term range effects that it may have. So we need to teach a child is to appreciate when to speak, how to speak, to be able to curb their speech, that their speech should be refined speech, and they should know the art of silence, of not speaking sometimes because of this aspect of the power of speech. It's very interesting that Rabbi Feuer in Tillum Treasury quotes a very fascinating interpretation of the opening words of Shemona Esrei that we daven every day. Really, we daven three times a day in Shacharis, Mincha, and Maariv. Before we say the Shemona Esrei itself, even though we're supposed to have no interruption between Ga'al Yisrael and the Shemona Esrei, between Gula and Tefillah, we have one statement that prefaces our Shemona Esrei, and that is Hashem Sfasai Tiftach, my Lord, open my lips, Ufi Yagid Tfilasecha, and let my mouth speak words of praises to you. So he says, this is a very, at a literal level, it's an introduction to prayer. When man, so frail and significant, is struck silent in awe as he stands before his Maker, he must appeal for divine assistance to open his mouth and endow with the ability to declare God's praises. But he takes this one step further. And he says, as we've noted, that the greatest gift of humanity that God has given us is the power of intelligent speech. It is very much a gift activated by divine will and in response to our own behavior. God bestows this gift on dumb animals as well. In regard to Bilam's donkey, it says, and Hashem opened the mouth of the donkey. And the Sforno there observes that the gift of intelligent speech to a donkey reminds us of the words of my Lord, open my mouth, so my mouth may declare your praises. And Rav Yaakov Yitzchak Ruderman Zatzal, near Yisrael, explained that the Sforno is teaching us to appreciate human speech as no less a miracle than the speech of a donkey. Man should never take this gift for granted. He should regard his very utterance as renewal of the Almighty's blessing of verbal communication. Moreover, even those words given to man are not his personal property. They belong to the Almighty, who grants them as a temporary concession. The license to use this concession must be renewed 3 times a day at the commencement of prayer, but may be revoked by God if it is used in thoughtless or countless manner. When we stand in prayer each day and renew our license to speak, we must remember that the license only allows us positive speech. Reckless speech, like reckless diving, is not permitted. The request is succinct and to the point. My Lord, open my lips, that my mouth may declare your praise and nothing else. And this is based on the insights of the Yaros Tvash as well. What the Tillon Treasury is saying is a very powerful idea. If we understand the power inherent in speech, we understand the worlds that it can create and destroy, we understand that 3 times a day we ask God for license to be able to speak, that we recognize that speech is a gift. We recognize the power of speech. And we say, God, please open up our lips. Please, 3 times a day, grant us this license to speak. And I'll use it, Ufi Agisi Lasecha, to be able to serve you. I'll use this properly like a person with a driver's license. Use this in a responsible way. If they're too tired, if they're not focused, they don't drive. If you're too tired, you're too angry, you're not focused, don't speak. It's the same license. This is the key, my friends. You ever have this situation where it's on the tip of your tongue, but you just can't find the right words, or you're lost for something to say? It's a gift, my friends. We so often think that we're in control of speech. It's really not true. It's a gift that God gives us continually, the ability to speak, the ability to express ourselves. We ask permission 3 times a day. God, give us this aspect. Give us this aspect and help us use this for the positive. We need to be able to appreciate that which we take for granted, its inherent power and its inherent effects, and how we really need to ask for it as permission from God. Final idea from Masisiao, and the final idea on this level. He says, why do we use speech so destructively? It all comes down to a lack of faith. We do not have faith in our own importance and significance. We do not have faith in our own power to effect enormous changes, both in this world and the next, to build and to destroy. This, then, must be our first step to gain control of the power of speech. We have to believe in ourselves. We have to believe that every word we speak leaves its mark in the lower worlds and in the higher worlds. We have to believe that our words can build and they can destroy. We have to recognize the awesome power of speech that God has infused in us, the divine power he has shared with us when he created us in his image. Only if we respect the power of speech can we harness it for the good. Level number one, what we learn from the laws of Erechim, is the power of speech. How a person has the ability to consecrate himself or an object to the temple just by using his words. If we would understand the power inherent in our words, if we would understand the power inherent in ourselves, we would use speech differently. We would recognize that we, every single individual without exception, has the ability to build and to destroy, has the ability to create the divine presence among them. We have this ability. It's the power, the gift of speech. I think that's the first lesson that we can derive for today in the laws of Erechim. The second, which I think is equally important, and we'll see really comes to very much the same conclusion, is one of the details found in this law. And the Torah states the following. It speaks about if the endowment is an animal that can be offered as a sacrifice to God, that anything donated to God automatically becomes consecrated. Now, if it involves any unfit animal that cannot be offered as a sacrifice to the God, the owner shall present the animal to the priest. The priest shall set the endowment value according to the animal's good and bad qualities, and its endowment valuation shall be that which is determined by the priest. If the owner wishes to redeem it, he must add 20% to its endowment value. And Rabbi Chill in the Mitzvot gives the following case in perhaps a more simple term. If a person designated a house to the temple and then regretted his action and wanted to redeem it, the priest had to evaluate the house and the owner had to compensate the temple treasury with the sum plus the addition of an outside fifth of its value. So if a person decides to consecrate something and then decides, hey, you know what, I really want it back. So the person has to give the amount that it was worth, plus there's a knas, there's a fine. And the fine is an outside fifth of its value. Ask Rabbi Yerucham in Das Torah, why is this necessary? Here the person was motivated with good motivations to donate something, and he decides to change his mind. So why are we punishing such a person? His motivations were really poor and pure motivations. Okay, so he now changed his mind. So he has to pay the value of the animal. But to give him a knas, to give him a fine as well, why is this so? So says the Das Torah very powerfully at the end of the Chukosah. Aval makdish v'ayin yafeh hu makdish. V'im ken zeh ha-makdish. Acharei shekvar hi naseh pam ledargat makdish. Now that this individual has reached the level of being someone who's a makdish, someone who sanctifies an object for the temple. Ukishu pogdeh hekdesho, when he redeems this, tovi mimenu, we demand from him. Why? Here's the key, my friends. Ki tzarich lamshich dargato, a person should continue on his level. Vigam lahosif alah, and to add to that level. Liyot tamid, to constantly be ma'alah bakodesh, moving upward in holiness. Makdish veholechu makdish, to continue to sanctify and go further and sanctify. Why are we being so hard on this person? Was he not at one point motivated by very pure motivation? Okay, so he changed his mind. No. If a person has that pure motivation, then I want from that person, no, I demand from that person to continue on in that level of holiness, not to retract, not to go back. If you're on the level being Mekadesh, you're on the level to donate something, then continue on that level and don't retract. Donate more. Continue on that level of holiness. Continue on that level of commitment. We demand from a person to move upward in his level of commitment and not backwards. This idea is perhaps so beautifully discussed in the Nesivah Shalom. In the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha, where the first command of a Jew, Ne'amar Zot B'Lashon Halicha, is structured in the language of walking. Lech Lecha, go! To teach us that this is the job of every Jew. Lalecha V'Lit Kadem Tamid B'Darkol Yehudo. A person constantly has to move toward his destination, move toward his purpose in life. Life is about Halicha, moving. And as Siva Shalom points out, that there are three times the word Lech Lecha is used by the life of Avraham Avinu. Once, at the beginning of his life, where he's told to leave his homeland and go to Israel. Two, by Bris Milah, come before me, hitalech lefanai ve'yet tamim, and behold. And the third, the most difficult, the Lech Lecha l'Eretz HaMoriah, to go and sacrifice the Akedah Yitzchak, sacrifice Isaac. And he says that these three represent three different aspects, tkufot, three different time persons in a person's life. And in every time period of a person's life, you use different qualities, different life situations, and God gives you different experiences in order to tailor make it for where you are in life. Our first aspect of our life when we're young is to overcome our desires, our temptations, and be able to pull ourselves away from that to come closer to God. The second aspect is the actual coming closer to God. It's the aspect to reach shlemus, hitalech lefanai ve'yet tamim. And the third aspect is the ability to give of ourselves, but completely, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To be that Eretz HaMoriah, that Akedah, limsor et atzmo legamrei. To give of oneself completely. And he notes that a person, unlike in the physical world, where a person can be satisfied, shiamod amikomo, to stay in one place. But in spiritual terms, a person always has to move forward. V'im omeid bimkomo, and even if you stand in your place, hareza gufa nechshav lo yirida, it really is if you're moving downward, if you're not moving upward. And he says, this is not only a job for every period in our lives, Ella, rather, hein shebechol yom vayom, every single day. Sarich yudi leilech leitkadeim, a Jew has to constantly be moving forward. A Jew constantly has to see, how can I improve myself in life? Hein b'mitzvot ma'asiyot asei v'lo ta'asei, whether it's in the realm of mitzvot, both the positive and the negative mitzvot, as well, the hein b'mitzvot ha'masurot la'lev, as well as the mitzvot that are connected to the heart, like to love God, to have fear of God, shim eino osek bahem la'sigam, hareza asmo nesiga. Every single day we have to ask ourselves, are we improving in our mitzvot? Is my bracha on the Cheerios different today than it was yesterday? Is my shahako on my orange juice different than it was yesterday? Is my love for God a little bit more deeper today? Did I take a life situation, a story that somebody mentioned, and did I allow it to really become part of who I am, that I can grow further in my appreciation for God? I can go further in my awe of God, in my reverence for God. Do I have the ability to inculcate these feelings? And we're all touched by things that we see, by events around us, by the smile of a child. Did I take that beautiful smile of a child and say, wow, I feel closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for creating such a concept as this little child? Or to see a beautiful scenery in nature and become awe-inspired by it and allow it to affect my entire mindset of Avodas Hashem? This is what is required of us every single day, my friends. That every single day of our lives we're moving forward. That every single day of our lives we can say we're moving toward our destination. That we're like Avraham Avinu v'Avraham Zakein Ba Bayamin v'Hashem Beirachad Avraham Bakol. That Avraham was coming of days and he was able, and he was, God blessed him with everything. And as the Zohar Kadosh knows, what does it mean, coming of days? That he was able, Ba Bayamim, to take every single day and say, I used it for God. Every single day I used it to grow. Every single day I'm a different person. I'm a new person. Because this is why we were put in this world. Shemuchuyavim tamid leilech v'litkadein v'litakein yudam shayideze yitaknu tikun nishmatam v'yagiu al tachlitam hagamur ba'olamam. This is the only way we're going to be able to achieve our life purpose in this world. But I think in order to be able to achieve this, in order to be able to have this vision that every single day I'm going to accomplish something, that I'm moving forward in life and I'm not going to retract that hekdesh, there is a couple of key components that are necessary. There are three keys that we need to focus in on in order to be successful. Key number one is the concept of she'ifa, the concept of ambitious desire. Rav Dessler in Michtam Eliyahu in the third chelik points out that kashir meitziv adam atara latzmo, when a person has a goal for himself, lagil adargah mesuyemah, to reach a certain level, only knot ma'alam ma'alot ha'nefesh, to acquire a certain character trait, to work on anger, to work on saying brachos even better, to work on davening shmon esrei, that will take a little bit more time. Even though he knows it's difficult, and he knows he has to put in a lot of effort, but if he's able to be strong and say to himself, after all of the effort, and after all the time I'm going to put in, for sure I'm going to reach this level, then harei bitachon zeh, that self-assurance, kishel le'atzmo, in its own right, mochiach, is the biggest proof, sheyesh lo kfar achshav shayachut ma'lo toma alai leha, who Choter, he has in some way some attachment. He's somehow connected to that goal. Umishum kach ro bitchono sheyasigota. And because of this, there's a great assurance that he'll reach there. But if a person says to himself, after all my hard work, I'm not really sure whether I'm going to make it or not, the good chances are he won't make it because he doesn't have that ability of self-assurance. The key in life, my friends, is that we have that ability of faith in ourselves to say we can make it. We have the ability, hashoeif el hatov b'chol kocho, one who's ambitious to good with all of his might. He must say to himself that he has that ability to reach it. And if he has the ability to say that he can reach it, then he'll have the strength to reach it, and in the end, he'll be able to reach it. And so often, when a person is not able to reach such a goal, it really was because he didn't honestly believe within himself that he could reach there. Level number one is she'ifa. Key number one is the ability to have that ambition, to have that desire within oneself, to wake up in the morning and say, these are my goals for the day. If already you're establishing goals, you're already halfway there. If you're already able to say that today I'm going to be able to say five brachos with kavana, today I'm going to be able to count to 10 before I get angry, today I'm going to have more patience, whatever it is, and you set very concrete goals for yourself, and it's going to take hard work, and it's going to take effort, but if you're able to see that end goal sight in mind, you have that ambition, you're going to be successful. That's key one. Key number two to be successful every day is, and key number three are both aspects of recognition. Key number two is to recognize that by our natures, we are connected to God. By our natures, this is what we want. As Rav Wolbe in his essay on the Lev on the Heart points out, that the pasuk in our parsha, v'im tachu imi keri, if you walk with me by accident, which Rashi explains, mikashim libam li manamiz karev elai, based on Targum Unclus, that you harden your heart from coming closer to me, then all of these curses will happen. So says Rav Wolbe, you see from this understanding of the Targum Unclus that Rashi quotes, of hardening your heart to come closer to me, Hare Tivo Shal Halev, the natural aspect of a heart, Hu Lishof L'Kirvato Yitbarach, is to come closer to God. The rak im makshim libam kedei limnoah tai kavut az nitzbeit hashifa hazot. Only if you harden your heart, so then you've silenced this she'ifa, this desire. Continues Rav Wolbe, zeu ahefech mamusag shalanu, this is the exact opposite of the way we view things. Anachnu miyachasim et hakmiyah l'kadosh baruch hu l'madregot olah. We think a desire, a passion for God is a great level. That's not true. This is pashtut v'hateva sh'alev. This is a natural part of the heart. The chet ha'besisihi, the biggest sin we can do is to stop, to hold back this desire for God. And that's the sin of the tochacha, of the rebuke, that's found in Parshas Tochacha. Idea number two, the key element that we have to recognize, is we do long for perfection. We do long to move forward every day. We work hard on stopping ourselves. Let go. Recognize and allow to be stirred within us these desires, these feelings. The desire to be makdish, to make something hekdesh for God, to be able to sanctify something for God, that's natural. It takes a lot more effort to retract. Go forward with your desire, with your longing. And the last key and the second aspect of recognition is another insight of Ramosha on this parsha, that the tenth animal is Yeh Kodesh Lashem, is holy for God. And the Gemara Mechoril says, even though it's holy for God, nevertheless, you have to, Mikol Makom Sarich Lakdisho Bapeh, you have to orally say, this one is holy. And he says, we learn from here, this is the same thing true of us. Anything that's inherently kadosh, you have to lachziko b'kdusha, you have to earmark it and mention this is holy. Because if you don't do that, it could lose its status of holiness. And he says, likewise with a person who is kadosh, who is holy. Lo yismocha avaim, the father and the mother and the child themselves, an individual themselves, shouldn't just rely on the fact that we are inherently holy. Because if we don't educate toward this, if we don't educate toward the Tzelem Elokim, this divine presence, even though the person is a ben lamakol, is a child of God, and was given this great gift of Torah to enhance this Tzelem Elokim, this divine image, if we don't emphasize this and reinforce this and work on this, then we are going to lose this aspect of self. The second component, the third key, is to recognize that we are Kadosh. We are holy. It's integral to who we are. But we have to, like that tenth animal, say it and remind ourselves over and over again, we're Kadosh Lashem, we're holy to God. Let's behave in that way. Let's grow today as someone who's Kadosh, someone who's holy. And therefore, I think that this laws of Erechim, which seems to be so disconnected from our lives, teaches us in summation two very important points. It teaches us, number one, the power of speech, how we're able to elevate any aspect, any value, any article, and elevate it to God, elevate ourselves to God, dedicate ourselves to God. And on the second level, if a person reaches this level of dedication, they can't retract, they can't move back. And this has to be the lesson for us, that every day we have to move forward. We have to have set up those goals of those ambitions. We have to recognize our natural desires to come close to God. We have to recognize that we are holy. And perhaps with this we can understand why the Erechim values, as we saw in the beginning, are established based on our Torah and our mitzvot. It's established based on what our Yehud b'chayim is, what our purpose in life is. For a woman, it's the family. For the woman, it's the home environment, optimally. For the man, optimally, it's the community environment. Though it's not true in every case, that's the optimum. That's how the world was originally created. We have to recognize what is our purpose in life and ask ourselves, are we moving forward in that goal? Are we moving forward in Torah and mitzvot, which are incumbent on every person at whatever stage of the game? Are we moving forward in our focus of the family and the community? Is life about recognizing our erech, our inherent value, our inherent goals, our inherent purpose in this world? And if we're able to recognize this inherent value and purpose in this world and recognize our inherent greatness, we recognize the power of our speech. We recognize the effects that our speech can have. And we recognize how we are a chesav kedusha. We are a whole individuality of holiness. And therefore, we can create tremendous aspects in this world and in the higher world, because we are so holy, because we are so great. And we need to walk around with this feeling of self-empowerment of what we can create. And if we can recognize this, we recognize our value, we recognize our focus, so then every single day we can be able to fulfill that lech lecha, that ability of moving forward, of not standing still, and be able to go mala mala, malim bakodesh, upward and upward, in our holy endeavors to tap into those natural resources of greatness, of holiness, and connection to God.